And now, welcome to the Midday for a Wednesday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and we're going to be talking about and hearing music about subjects as diverse as depression and coffee during the next half hour.
In that order.
That's right. Well, yes, I think that's a good sequence because there will be a double feature played by the Madison Bach musicians and their linchpin, Trevor Stevenson, who's with me, and the performances, April 7th and 8th. And those take place over at the First Unitarian Society Atrium in Madison. So again, that's April 7th and 8th. And well, let's start with Mr. Henry Purcell and one of the earliest operas that we have, right?
Yeah, and one of the very few, you know, in a truly operatic format from Purcell in which there's no spoken dialogue. Purcell did lots of music for plays in which his musical pieces accented certain spoken dialogue. But this is sung throughout. It lasts less than an hour, and it's the story of Dido and Aeneas, which comes from the Trojan Greek legend, where, you know, after the Trojans are defeated, Aeneas is kind of, you know, wandering about with his fleet through the Caribbean, and he ends up lands up at Carthage.
What's he doing
in the Caribbean? Maybe the Mediterranean. They were very efficient. Yeah.
Poetic license.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So yeah, and he ends up at Carthage, where he falls in love with the queen of Carthage, Dido, and Purcell, you know, takes this story, and it's amazing, I think, how quickly you're thrown into the action of this. The way Purcell sets it is that Dido is really already very down. Her husband has been murdered some years earlier, and she's just kind of, you know, the whole Carthaginian civilization is kind of on the verge
tough
of foundering.
Times.
Yeah, it's hard times. And her assistant, Belinda, who we're going to hear from when the singing actually starts after the overture, Belinda is encouraging Dido to connect with the visitor Aeneas and maybe merge these two courts, you know, and for political gain.
Sure.
And
that was just the usual reason. Mm-hmm.
Dido is very down, but she eventually listens to Belinda, and they do connect, but they are tricked and destroyed by the sorceress and her lot.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert, right. Which in Virgil's telling of the story, you know, it was the work of the gods, the trickery was, but they weren't going to do that for the English version. So anyway, we're going to launch in here with, you know, the overture, and then we'll hear from Belinda, Dido's assistant, saying, you know, snap out of it. Don't be so depressed. Shake the clouds from off your brow. The chorus comes in and says, banish sorrow, banish care. Grief should never approach the fair, meaning you, Dido, you should don't be so down.
We should always have a chorus following us around for encouragement.
Exactly. And then Dido comes in with a long aria, which we'll just hear part of, about, you know, ah, Belinda, you know, I am, you know, grief is just overwhelming me.
And this is from a performance by the St. James's Singers with
Ivor
Bolton
conducting. Yes.
Yeah, right. Helpful. One of the earliest of all operas from about, what, 1688,
89? Right. You know, there are books written on when this was written. They don't really know. It's somewhere, in the late 1680s. But, well, we know that it was performed at Josias Priest's, school for young women, and was probably most of the roles except Aeneas were done by young women. But whether it was actually performed at court before that, it's tough to say.
But you're going to be performing at the
We're doing
April 7th. That's this weekend already.
That is this weekend, according to my calculations, right? And Chelsea Shepherd will be singing Dido, and Nola Richardson will be her assistant, Belinda. Belinda has an interesting role in this. I mean, in a way, she's the driver. She's kind of pushing Dido into this situation. Dido really doesn't want to talk to anybody, you know, and much less fall in love.
Right.
You know, Belinda's saying, oh, go ahead, get out there, get in the game, you know? So, Dido says, oh, okay, I guess he is cute, you know?
And, some things never change.
Right. And, but it costs her everything. But what's amazing about the story to me is that, the sorceress sets up a false Mercury. There's a Mercury who appears to Aeneas. This is after Dido. Aeneas fall in love and says to Aeneas, you know, the gods are really quite upset with you. You're supposed to be on your way to creating the new Troy, which is going to be Rome.
They say this to Aeneas.
Yeah, they say this to Aeneas, right? And Aeneas listens. And then he listens, and then he says, how will I ever tell Dido? You know, we've just fallen in love, and now I'm moving out.
Love, you know? Versus duty.
Right, exactly.
Or, and, you know, family versus job.
But it's a trick. It's not really the gods, you know. I mean, it's just a hologram of the gods kind of thing. So, so he leaves. And the psychologically, what makes this so modern is that at the critical moment where he tells Dido, I'm going to leave, and she already has a hint that he's going to leave, she's so distraught that he changes his mind. He says, oh, I can see you're really, really crushed. I'll stay. I will. And she says, no, you're going. She says, the fact that you would even consider leaving me means we're done.
Yeah,
like
right.
that. And she pushes him out the door, and then she says, bring death, bring it on, you know, and she dies of grief right there.
In some couple.
So, yeah, I think that's very modern.
Sure.
Anyway, and it all plays out in 50 minutes. There is a full Baroque orchestra for this production. There are great dance sequences, several dance sequences. And there's an onstage chorus that gets, you know, function as, you know, the witches chorus,
wow.
The kind of townsfolk, the sailor. Yeah, it's all, David Ronis is directing this. We don't know what to call it, if it's stage, semi-stage, partially
sure.
stage,
yeah,
you know, what,
it's,
you know, it's not a theater, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but,
it's
but it's really, really a gripping drama.
Can we grip one more part of it?
We can. Let's just listen to the sailor's dance. This is when Aeneas tells the, you know, he says to the sailors, he's already said the ships have to go. We got to sail tonight if we're going to, you know, make the gods happy. So, and the sailors are all it's a huge party as they're getting, you know, getting up their energy to get the fleet ready.
Sailors being sailors.
Right. And then they sing, it's a very kind of, you know, a lusty song as they're saying, you got to say goodbye to your sweethearts and you'll never see him again, but, you know, don't tell them that.
A lively party for sailors.
Yeah, it's a wonderful performance with Renaissance strings there and the theorbo, you know, creating that wonderful chiff, rhythmic chiff in the background,
yeah.
You know.
Which
is the way that we'll be doing this here this weekend on Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, with all period strings and harpsichord and theorbo in the back.
Lively stuff. Dancers in there, too, did you say?
Absolutely, yeah. Also, I think almost, something like 10 dance sequences in this. Some of them brief, but, you know, that's the way they, in the 17th century, that dancing on the stage was just a huge part of the show.
Yeah, for sure. That went on for quite a long time. Well, we promised everybody coffee.
Exactly. Even though it's after 12. I try never to drink it after 12.
This kind you can drink anytime.
Right. And just a little bit about Bach and the coffee house culture in Leipzig. Bach begins working in Leipzig in the early 1720s and writes virtually a cantata a week for many years. He then, in the 1727-28, starts to have a bit of a falling out with the consistory at the church, arguments over which hymns to be played at which days and all of that. And we know that Bach begins to hang out a lot more at the coffee house, which is not only great coffee, but it's a musical environment. There, he's doing loads of concerts there. And it now appears that it's not just a few concerts. It was hundreds and hundreds of concerts in a 10-year stretch, really equaling and maybe even surpassing the amount of time he was spending at the church doing church, which is still a staggering amount. The coffee houses in Leipzig were a legitimate way for the middle-class Lutherans, right, to go out and have a nice time and still be, you know, a good citizens. And these they ran all summer long. They ran in the winter. Bach would have performed in outdoor concerts in the summer, indoor concerts in the winter. And he every week there was something, you know, new, or he would find a way to recycle old material, take an oboe concerto, turn it into a harpsichord concerto,
sure,
what have you. But he also wrote some cantatas for this. And the one that Madison Bach musicians will be doing this weekend is now known as the Coffee Cantata. And it is about coffee and addiction and family dynamics. And it's one of the only funny things Bach ever wrote. And he used his go-to librettist, which was named as Picander, who had written the St. Matthew Passion libretto. And here they are doing a complete cut-up. Briefly, the story is that you have a father and a daughter and a narrator, and the narrator kind of, you know, gets them on and off the stage, but the father and daughter are in a knockdown dragout over her addiction to coffee. And he says, you know, you're of marriageable age and you can't be married if all you do is drink coffee and all you do is think about coffee. She has the much more convincing argument because she sings so beautifully about how great coffee tastes and how she has to have it three times a day and all this stuff. At the end, the father thinks he's won out. He thinks finally she's going to listen to him because she wants a husband so much, and she appears to be acquiescing when really she's getting him out of her hair while she circulates the news around town that whoever is going to court her has to promise in a prenup to let her drink coffee all she wants. And in the end, she wins, you know. She tricks him. And the last chorus of the piece is that cats will always chase mice. It's a wonderful chorus. The cats will always chase mice. You can't change anything, basically. People will drink coffee. Grandmothers drink coffee. Mothers drink coffee. Don't blame the daughters. Yeah.
So this is a chorus from the Coffee Cantata.
Exactly. And now we're actually going to start here with, this is the Lieschen, the daughter's aria about the great beauty of coffee and how it smells so good, it tastes so good. And Bach uses the Baroque flute as kind of the sensual, you know, gloss for all of this. It's one of the best uses, I think, of the Baroque flute.
Quite a nice sinuous little duet.
Yes.
Between the coffee drinker and the flute representing all of the sensual delights of
absolutely
coffee.
And we were saying coffee had only been in German culture for about 40 years when Bach wrote this cantata. It was a new thing. It was the latest fashion. And in this setting here is very minuet-like, which is another of the latest dances. So it's like, if you're happening, you're drinking coffee. Yeah.
Great. Well, probably the best advertising music ever written.
I think so, yeah.
Coffee Cantata by Bach, which is sharing a double bill with one of the very first operas ever written, mm-hmm. a nice genteel thing called Dido and Aeneas mm-hmm. by Henry Purcell. This is the Madison Bach musicians performing those two short works on a double bill, April 7th and 8th. And that is at the Unitarian Society, First Unitarian Society Atrium, Auditorium. And you can find out more, I'll bet, if you go to madisonbachmusicians.org. Org.
Yes.
And the founder and director of the Madison Bach Musicians, Trevor Stevenson, is my occasional guest, and today's been another one.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Norman.